Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back at 12 after. I'm letting this music play a little bit because I know how much Joan Pride loves ZZ Top. Right, Joan?
Yeah, right.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Welcome back, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
How many times have you commented on me being a sharp-dressed man, Joan? I really appreciate you.
That'll take me a minute to count all the time.
That wasn't supposed to be funny, Joan. I'm serious.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Count the times, huh?
I'm working on it. I'll get back to you after the next break.
Hey, tell me what's going on in the Senate. Is this a mini buster instead of a filibuster?
They've moved in.
What's going on up there? This isn't in the letter, folks. She didn't know I was going to ask her this. Tell us what's happening. What's the news?
Well, I honestly don't understand it. You know, there's this big row over judicial nominations. There's a big fight between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Well,
they've moved Kotzin so they could spend all night talking about it.
Well, the problem is that Mr. Bush has got half a dozen, soon to be eight, nominees that he can't get through. He can't get to the floor for an up or down vote because the Senate is filibustering it, right? A couple of the Democrats are filibustering, right? To prevent that from happening. So, and they can't get closure because you got to have 60 votes to close to get them to shut up, and they don't have those. But they got enough to confirm these guys. Judicial nominees, and so that's what's been going on. But that's kind of part of the normal operating procedure in the Senate. Some will argue with that a little bit, but basically the filibuster is normal. But what's happening right now is the Republicans have literally occupied the Senate, right?
That's right, and they were supposed to spend all night debating this.
30 hours.
And I think it was a little drama injected into this, but they actually rolled Kotz into the Senate, in order to let people, you know, grab naps if they needed to, since they were going to keep the Senate in all night.
But what is the resolution? I mean, what's the plan?
Well, I don't know what the outcome is. I didn't see anything in the morning paper, so I don't know.
But aren't they trying to? Is this a way of overcoming the filibuster?
I'm reading here now. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Well, apparently, folks, they're trying to change the rules. I think literally, according to the Republicans.
Well, I don't think you can change the rules.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to do, though, Joan. According to the Republicans, the Democrats are abusing this power in a way that's never been done before. Now, that's the Republicans saying this. I'm not saying that that's correct. I'm just saying the Republicans are saying that the Democrats are overusing and misusing their filibuster power when they ought to be letting these nominees at least get to the floor for an up or down vote. And so now the Republicans are doing something that I guess they think is within their rights.
Apparently the Republican majority is staging 30 hours of debate.
Yeah.
If you've started a filibuster and you allow and you give the floor away, then the filibuster is over.
Right.
So I think what the Republicans are trying to do is keep everybody in and keep talking so that they can get the floor back and break the filibuster. They're calling it a reverse filibuster.
Yeah, that's what I was that makes a lot of sense now. It makes
I mean, the rule actually didn't change, but what they're trying to do is sort of break filibuster, and it's interesting. I think there should be more. I think the majority should let filibusters go ahead. What usually happens now is a senator just says, threatens a filibuster, and that stops everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's called putting a hold on a bill or a nomination.
Right.
They don't make the senator actually come to the floor and start the filibuster.
I think they ought to make them do that.
I think they should. Every time there is a threat of a filibuster, make the guy or the gal get up there and start talking.
Exactly.
If they can't keep the floor, then that's their own problem.
What kind of weenies are these people? I mean, if they're going to filibuster, let them do it, right?
Well, I think you raise a good point. The problem is it's 100 There are 100 people in this body, and they know that if they do something to someone else, it's going to be done to them someday.
Why can't we just go back to good old fisticuffs? I mean, I think you ought to get up there and just duke it out, and you know, like
we had that in the House a year or two ago.
Let the Republicans pick their guy, and let the Democrats pick their guy, and let's duke it out.
Works for me.
Well, all this civilized filibustering and reverse filibustering, I don't know what we're going to do, but it's an interesting thing. We're having a little fun with it, folks, but it is kind of a serious thing, isn't it, Joan, this judiciary thing? And this is, again, we're off the letter, but this is news. This is something that's very interesting. I've never seen this in my life, and, Joan, I'm not sure it's ever happened before, what the Republicans are doing.
Not the reverse. There's the last filibuster, I think I've got this figure at my fingertips, was just only a few years ago. Let's see. The most recent live and memorably long filibuster was 11 years ago. Former Senator Al D'Amato sang songs, told stories, and held the Senate for 15 hours and 14 minutes to protest a tax provision in a bill that was going to take jobs away from his state.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. Well, folks, this is a story you're going to want to follow if you like politics. This is politics.
Who does?
Exactly. Joan, let's talk about the economy. You guys say it's going to slow, but not stall.
Right, and we're sort of reacting to what we're calling here a blistering third quarter gain, and we talked about this last week, if you remember.
7.2%
in the third quarter. And we're saying that we expect growth to decelerate to 4.5% this quarter and 3.5% in the first quarter of 2004. Now, those numbers are still wonderful.
That's like saying, slow this thing down to 120, for God's sake.
Exactly. No one should be upset about the rate going down. In fact, as we said last week, you don't want it to stay at 7.2%. That would be kind of its own disaster.
Right. Yeah. Well, but you also say that first quarter 2004 is going to be the least robust, but that we're going to have a good 2004, it looks like, according to Kipper.
Right, but because it's going to drop that far to 3.5%, people are going to start to get worried that this is another so-called false start, because you remember we've had them coming out of this recession. We thought the recession was over, and then the economy kind of fell back.
Right.
So the question is going to be, is that going to happen again? And our answer is, we don't expect that to happen, even though first quarter 2004 will be the least robust of these three quarters.
Well, and the thing is, Joan, let's go back to something we've been saying for a long time, an analogy that we've been, or a term that we've been using for a long time. We may like the numbers, or we may not like the numbers if they're coming down too much, but we got to like the trend, because overall we're seeing the trend going up in the future, in the near future especially. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 23 after. A little more ZZ Top for our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
Stop.
I can't get enough of it. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. Joan, according to Kiplinger, the employment situation is looking better.
Well, yes, it is. But we say, you know, it's not going to be just a straight upward trajectory, just like GDP.
Right.
And people have to sort of be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Joan, recently, in fact, in the last hour, Sam Norwood with Tatum Partners reported their monthly survey to us, which we do, and he pointed out that the 400 or so of his partners that they polled, they reported really significant expectations of hiring over the next 60 days.
Wow.
So that's good news.
Yeah, that is.
That's really good news, but we got a long way to go, haven't we? I mean, we got millions of people unemployed, and the interesting thing about this employment thing, Joan, is because unlike any other recovery in recent history, within the last 100 years, people who are going back to work this time, many, many, many of them are not going back to the jobs that they left.
Oh, that's right.
Because the reason is because those jobs aren't there anymore.
Right, and that's going to keep happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, another thing at the bottom of page one that you talk about companies being poised to rebuild their inventories. Another of our economic experts, Chuck Cadlick, was on the show this week, and he pointed out that in the third quarter, one of the things that that improved the economy in the third quarter, we had a drawdown of our inventory, our national inventory, of $35 billion. And so that's a big inventory hole that's going to have to be refilled. So that bodes well for the next couple of quarters, doesn't it?
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
And you guys point that out, is that we're poised to do that now. We're actually...
Right.
We're not afraid to gear up for it because we like the news. You know, in the past, Joan, even if we thought things were going to get better, we'd been burned so many times over the last 3 years. A lot of companies were still too cautiously optimistic, weren't they?
Well, and we've been talking about that for ages. We've been saying, how long can the consumer carry the load that mm-hmm. businesses were at some point were going to have to step up and start to really invest and get the economy moving, and that's what we think is finally going to start happening.
Well, according to the Tatum survey that I mentioned earlier, the capital spending and employment were two really good pieces of news in that survey of about 600 or 800 companies, and most of these are emerging companies, not real small businesses. They're in the multi-million, $5 to $20 million range. They're more emerging rather than the tiny businesses. Joan, let's move over and talk about mutual funds. You've got some news there, don't you?
Well, and your listeners probably have heard a lot about the news in which some mutual funds have been called on the carpet for some illegal and some legal but shady activities,
mm-hmm.
such as what we call market timing and late trading, which allows certain investors to make a profit when the rest of us don't. Pardon me. But
mm-hmm.
What we're saying is that the SEC is really going to crack down here and require better disclosure of a lot of things that go on with mutual funds and improve the corporate governance of mutual funds. And Congress is going to let the SEC go ahead and do that and not try to jump in and legislate like they did with the accountants and Sarbanes-Oxley.
What do you know about? Do you know anything about some of the penalties that some of these companies that were involved in this scandal? Do you know about some of the penalties that were levied on them?
I don't remember the numbers. I know that there are criminal proceedings going on, not just from the SEC, but also the New York pesky New York State Attorney General, Mr. Spitzer.
Yeah,
he has really gone after these,
the
and quite a lot of them are in his state.
Yeah, he hooks his fang in those guys. He doesn't turn loose, does he?
Boy, that's right.
Well, this needs to happen. I mean, Joan, if we don't get control, if we don't try to build some kind of trust and confidence back in our financial markets, I mean, that's the backbone of our economy, is being able to create the working capital out of these through direct investment. And we need our financial markets to be not only strong but to be dependable and honest.
Well, and this doesn't come at a very good time, of course, since we were just trying to get over the Enron-induced investor confidence problem.
Right. Yep. But I predict, Joan, that as the economy picks up and as the stock market picks up again, people will get over this pretty quick, don't you? I mean, we got a taste of it in the 90s, and we want some more of it, don't you think?
I think you're right, although I think it's interesting in that mutual funds, I think the figure is something like 95 million people are invested in mutual funds.
Right.
So this is something that can hit home and people can see and touch and feel, unlike some of the problems with Enron and WorldCom and the
mm-hmm.
like.
Yeah, no question about it. Joan, let's move down quickly and talk about something that's going on with in the Supreme Court. A couple of issues here. This is the Southwest Airlines case. The 11th Circuit is weighing whether Americans with Disability Act applies to company websites. And tell us about that a little bit.
Well, as you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act requires what they call equal access for the disabled. And,
mm-hmm.
and what it sounds like here is that the issue is how does a vision-impaired customer deal with a company's website? Do they need some kind of special help from the companies? And I would think that would be pretty expensive.
Hold on to that thought, Joan. Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Another one, a French issue, which is going to get my blood boiling. right after these messages. We've got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. 34 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too, because it's always more fun when she joins me and when I have to do this by myself. And, Joan, we're talking about the Supreme Court cases. I was just mentioning, we were talking about the Disabilities Act, the ADA, and whether Southwest Airlines, for example, which is the defendant in this case, should be required to offer a website that would help the vision impaired customers. Now, what do you think?
Well, this is interesting because businesses have grappled with this issue before. I know that banks have the problem regarding their ATMs, that people have complained that you need to have ATMs that are equipped for the vision impaired. So I think this is something that may be spreading to other types of things that that are used by the vision impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my only concern here would be that it'd be very expensive, I guess. Maybe not. Maybe just adding sound to your website would make a difference.
But the thing is, could this set a precedent, though? I mean, could I be required to do something like this? And I'm not being, I don't want to sound insensitive, Joan. You know that I'm not being insensitive to the visually impaired or anybody else. But what if Southwest Airlines is required to do this? How long before your website or my website is required to do this?
Right. Well, in your case, I think it depends on the size of the business. I think the Americans with Disabilities Act does not apply to businesses below a certain number of employees.
Tell that to Ted Kennedy and the American Civil Liberties Union, Joan. I'd like to hear you argue that with those guys. They don't understand stuff like that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not arguing it. I'm just saying I think it's a fact. So that if the court says the ADA applies, then it would apply to the companies that are listed as being eligible in that act.
Which are a lot of companies that are still relatively small.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, my company's not that large, but, it may be in 2 years. Who knows? But the thing is, there are a lot of small businesses out there that this would apply to. And I remember when the ADA, when the American for Disabilities Act came out, it was codenamed the Attorney Retirement Bill.
Yeah.
and in some ways...
That's certainly true.
But, you know, Joan, if we remember, the courts have not always... The courts have taken some turns that weren't expected recently with regard to ADA, haven't they?
Well, I think one of the problems with the act that Congress left a lot of open questions. And the courts have been ruling, fortunately, in a lot of cases, I think they've been ruling to... I wouldn't say to narrow the scope of the act, but to define it better so that people don't get too crazy in terms of what they feel they can claim is a disability or is an accommodation that needs to be made for them.
Right, absolutely. Let's move on down to the next one. And this is an interesting one, folks. It's Yahoo versus Creme Brulee, Crepe Suzette, Chevrolet Bouquet. Right, Joan?
Now, you promised me you were going to say the name of this case properly.
La Ligue contre le racisme et l'antisémitisme. How's that? That was better the second time. That was better the second time, wasn't it?
I don't know.
As you can tell, folks, this is a case with Yahoo versus the French. And tell us about it, Joan.
Well, I don't know what I can say about this, except I think Yahoo should be able to win over France. But in any case, the question is whether a U.S. firm's website, in this case Yahoo, is required to block access to residents of France if the site has material on it that France considers to be illegal. Now, I would think that for any Internet company or any company with a website to have to know to block material to a certain group of people would be a terrible precedent.
Joan, this is no different from the ADA thing. It's a different story, but it's the same concept.
Well, no, I think with the ADA thing, let's say you were told, well, you need to accommodate these disabled, then you make the accommodation on the website. I'm not saying that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But in this case, you're having to to block content to certain users, mm-hmm. but you don't know who's using your website, so you don't know which content you're supposed to be blocking. You'd have to know the laws of every country.
That's exactly right. And so it's a mess, and once again, the French folks rear their ugly head in this case.
Right.
And Joe, did I tell you that when I landed in Paris on my way back from Sweden back in June, I refused to spend any money there? Did I tell you about that?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I didn't drink. I don't even think I drank their water while we waited on our airplane. I'm still so mad at them.
Yeah.
About their behavior. But anyway, this is another example of some of the nutso stuff that's going on out there, folks. And our fine Supreme Court is going to be dealing with this. So pay attention. Believe it or not, both of these cases could affect you. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. By the way, folks, in the corrections and omissions section of the show, I'd like to point out that I misspoke earlier. I said our Supreme Court was going to be hearing these cases. The truth is they may be hearing them. It hasn't gotten there yet. They may not take them up yet. And so, in the interest of full being absolutely correct, right, Joan?
Well, you know, that's why I'm here.
Well, why didn't you point that out earlier then?
Well, I was trying to be polite.
Joan, your website is Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to check it out and go there and just noodle around on the site. It's free. You can wander around on it. And then if you decide that you'd like to have more information, a little more in-depth information like the kind that they produce in their publications, then you can get them by subscribing there on the website at Kiplinger.com. to their weekly flagship letter now in its 81st year, the Kiplinger letter. And then there are three other letters, the biweekly letters, which are the California, the Tax, and the Agriculture letter. And then they have a magazine, too, which is available in bookstores and newsstands and also by subscription, Joan.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, and that's been around a long time, too. About as long as I've been on the earth. And so check those out whenever you get a chance. Joan, let's move down and talk about the steel tariffs that Mr. Bush put on a couple of years ago. What's going to happen with those?
Well, boy, they've been in the news a lot lately because now the World Trade Organization has said that they are an illegal subsidy.
Yep.
And that now it's interesting because I don't think all the countries that could put tariffs on will, or put retaliatory tariffs on will. I think Asia has backed off on the. I think maybe China. I'm forgetting who backed off, but the EU is what's.
We're worried about this
area
because
that's really going after this.
Yeah, we're worried that they're going to put tariffs on your caviar, Joan, and your champagne. We're worried about
no.
that.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Excuse me, I have to go run out and buy some of that now. But here's the problem: Bush is kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
He has a political cost whether he backs off or whether he hangs tough. And I'm not sure. In this case, I really don't know what he really should do. We're forecasting that he will lift the tariffs by January.
Well, he should not have put them on, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh,
this is one
man.
Of the biggest mistakes that he's made since he's been in
yeah.
office. This was a terrible mistake because he
Why
saved...
Why do you think he did that?
I really don't know because...
I've never understood that decision.
Well, it's not a good political move because, he helped about 15,000 jobs, but he hurt hundreds of thousands of jobs.
Yeah.
And now with the possibility of retaliating, it could be a lot more. I mean, he helped the steel production industry, but he harmed those industries who worked with steel.
Right.
So hopefully he'll lift this. And maybe there was some national security issue there. I don't know. But I've asked some people who I thought would have known, and they really didn't have a good answer for me. But
yeah.
I hope he lifts that. Joe, let's move over to three and talk about Mr. Rumsfeld. He's got some problems. Has some problems for the last couple of weeks, hasn't he?
Well, as you know, Iraq has continued to be a problem with this insurgency and their suicide bombs and other things. And we had the downing of the Chinook helicopter recently. We're saying that, you know, Donald Rumsfeld is kind of the lightning rod for these criticisms. So we say he's taking his share of knocks these days. And then that sort of begs the question, well, will he stay or will he go?
He's the rock star of that administration. He can't.
Boy, it sure looks that way.
Yeah. I like his glasses too, by the way. By the way, I had those before he did. Just to let you know, Joan, how many is a SLU?
A lot. It's a lot.
All right. This is the quote from Kiplinger, folks. Missile research is spawning a SLU of commercial spinoffs. How many exactly?
Tons. That's tons and tons.
Is that like a gaggle of geese?
There you go.
Okay.
A pride of lions.
So. Okay. No more, please. Tell us about it.
Well, what we're talking about, again, missile research, which usually starts in the military, is really going to have some commercial uses, which is sort of interesting. There's a whole sort of, I guess, a bunch of fringe benefits for commercial firms, if you will. And there's a whole list of them here. It was just kind of interesting. One of the things we talk about here is a 3D imaging scanner, and this would be used in the medical profession,
right,
for such things as reconstructive surgery after a mastectomy.
The word for this is technology transfer, folks.
Exactly.
And Joan, earlier in the week, Ron Peterson was on the show talking to us about the importance of small businesses noodling around these missile research firms and some of the government installations. Don't noodle around, where they can't see you, folks. Make sure they know you're there. But also a lot of universities that are working with these defense organizations. There's a lot of opportunity there, Joan, apparently, for small businesses to take some of these patents and take advantage of them and create some commercial applications for them.
Exactly. That's a good point.
You mentioned, one of the things you guys mentioned is an ultrasound monitor from Lason Technologies and the photochromatic ink, a lightweight electric battery. I mean, there are a lot of things out there, aren't there?
Yeah, an electronic transistor that operates at high temperatures and so that you can keep your electronic parts cooler.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. It's all about technology transfer, folks. It's a great opportunity. Joan, let's quickly, before we go to the break, let's talk about telephone service. It won't be deregulated, but isn't you guys say it's not going to be deregulated anytime soon, but isn't the ability to take my regular phone number, my hardline phone number, and convert it to my cell phone, isn't that a form of deregulation?
It sure sounds that way. That's a different issue than what they're talking about here, but you do raise a good point. That's going to be huge for a lot of people who want to make that transfer.
Well, if most of us start going to cell phones, I mean, who will care if the regular phone service is deregulated? Nobody will be using
it. Tim, you got to get jiggy now.
Tim Till, we're going to get jiggy again with our friend Joan Pride right after these messages. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I want to encourage you to remind you about their website, kiplinger.com. And Joan, I think we forgot. I want you to give the phone number that if anybody would like to call and ask about the 30-day free trial for subscribers, to subscribe, I should say, to your publications. Why don't you give us that toll-free
number?
Sure,
I would be happy to. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Yeah, and don't forget Kiplinger.com. It's a good site. I use it all the time. Even though I'm a subscriber, I use their site, even just the regular stuff that's not even part of the subscriber base. So check them out when you get a chance. Joan, I want to go back to this phone thing a minute. The local phone service, you're saying, won't be deregulated anytime soon, even though Verizon and some other organizations are pushing it to be. But again, that's the hard line. That's the landline side of the
right.
of the telecom issue. But as of is it already passed? Has the law already passed that allows us to have our regular phone put over to our cell phone, phone number?
Yes.
We can do that now, can't we?
I believe so, yeah.
So, you know, more and more, Joan, we don't call buildings, we call people. We don't call places, we call people. And so, I mean, I know a lot of business people who now, especially those who travel quite a bit, and they basically don't give you anything but their cell number.
That's That's right. That's a good point. I mean, I think at some point we're going to get to a point where someone's born and they're assigned a phone number and they just take that with them the rest of their lives.
Here's your phone number, and now here's your Social Security number.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And
can't you see that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. No question. And so the point is then, who cares about deregulation almost? It seems kind of silly. Okay, Joan, I'm really upset about this next thing because I'm worried for yourself, for you.
I dreaded this item.
Well,
here we go.
They're clamping down on the use of personal business jets. Joan, what are you going to do?
Walk.
I mean, they're making all these new rules for flying business jets, and they're banning them in some small airports, aren't they?
I'm outraged.
Well, your big one can't fly into some of the small airports now.
I'm going to have to downsize.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do about that. But
some of them don't have runways long enough to accommodate big planes. That's what we say.
I know it, and we need to fix that, and we'll work on that, Joan. Let's move over and talk about Cuba. Cuba is an interesting situation, isn't it? We've got an aging dictator, the only non-democracy in the Western Hemisphere. Do you know that, Joan?
I believe that to be true, sure.
They're
kind of a dinosaur in the way they, you know, in their attitude, in their politics.
The closest thing to them might be him. I guess I shouldn't say from a communist standpoint, the closest thing would be China, I guess. But from the standpoint of the way that he operates, I guess maybe Saudi Arabia could be considered similar.
Could be.
To Cuba. But our country has got a pretty hard line against Cuba, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're saying that Bush is blocking any kind of relaxing of travel restrictions or trade or anything like that.
But I know people who are going down there, Joan. I know two or three different people who either have gone and are going back or are going.
Well, in certain limited circumstances, you can. But like I said, it's very limited.
Right. Yeah, but there are licenses that are being given right now. How old is Castro?
In his, I think about
120.
Pardon me?
He's in his high 70s, isn't he? He's 70.
Well, he must be, because this revolution took place, 50 years ago?
Have you noticed that you haven't seen his image or heard much about him in the last year or so?
That's true. Barbara Walters hasn't interviewed him for a few years, I guess.
Barbara Wawa? But
yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, when he dies, it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, Joan, what do you think? 20 years from now, the 51st state could be Cuba?
Oh, easily. I can't imagine that he has put a great succession plan in place. So I think the whole regime is going to fall apart as soon as he's gone.
Right. Okay, Joan, we've got about 30 seconds. Mr. Bush is making a trip to England.
Yes, to see his good friend Tony Blair, who has practically given up his political career for Mr. Bush.
What are they going to do over there?
Well, they're going to talk about Iraq, and I guess there may be some concern that Britain might pull back a little bit, but we're saying that won't happen, that Blair will stand in lockstep with Bush throughout this.
Joan, I know you join me in taking my hat off this week of Veterans Day, the week that we celebrate veterans and honor them. I know you'll join me in taking our hats off and saluting all the members of our military, wherever they are currently, standing
That's right.
a post on our behalf.
Right.
And we're so proud of them, and Joan, I know you agree with me that their contribution and their sacrifice is not lost on me, and I know it's not lost on you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Joan. See you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.